This is Story Mode Final Fantasy XV. I am Sam, and I'm joined by my Spotify Gaming Club buddies to talk about our time with Final Fantasy XV, to share with you our feelings as we play through the entire game. And for this week, we have decided to play until the end of Engaging the Empire, and we're about to start All Set to Sail. Right? So yes. Please, let's do intros. Yes. I'm your host, Sam.
My name is Marco, and I like to clap.
I'm Joe, robot.
I'm Catherine, and I'm not sick anymore, so I sound like a person this week.
Yay!
I'm Scott, and I'm back, and my favorite thing about the last episode is that my absence was noted only at the final minute, and I thought that was fantastic. I was like, oh, they didn't forget me.
I actually forgot about that. I had a mental note to actually mention you in the beginning.
Didn't we?
No, not in the beginning.
No.
I was going to, but I got sidetracked by something.
Joe's paper.
That's right.
Where are your props this time, Joe?
All right. So, last we left off, we just farted with a titan.
Woo!
Farting around.
We just fought the Archean, right? We broke his arm. Yeah. We saw his package.
His giant fist.
His lack of a package.
You got to get closer.
No.
Say it again.
This is fun. Good thing I had garlic sauce
Ken
today.
Doll.
Yeah.
The smooth Ken doll situation.
Yeah.
And Arden picked us up with some Deus Ex Machina ship.
That was actually the name of the ship, too.
Was it?
No.
And dropped us off at the Chocobo Dude Ranch.
Yes. Right.
We are now left without a car. Our precious regalia is no longer. And we start a new mission called Engaging the Empire. Right? No. What was it called? It was like...
There were like three, right? There were three
something
for these.
Yeah, hexadecimal.
Hexathian's Blessing.
That's it.
That crushed it.
I love reboot.
And so what happens? What happens, Joe? Like...
Let me see. I'm trying to remember.
Umbra.
Well, before, the dog. The dog.
That's like the first thing.
So the dog came, and we have another flashback scene with Lady Lunafreya. What were they talking about? I don't remember.
Was it a flashback? Isn't
no.
that the one where he's
it
running?
It was when they were children, and it's just them talking about something.
Oh, it's the cosmology book.
Doesn't that happen after, like, first thing is you meet Gentiana, right?
No.
No, the dog is first.
No, the dog comes to you and it's like, hey, come follow me. And you're like,
and
okay,
leads
I'll go.
You to the...
I see.
Yeah.
Right, kind of runs to a place. And then as you start to chase it, you have like, there's a wind blows.
Got you.
And Gentiana appears before you.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, buddy, you got to do some things. You got to touch some stones.
And I see in the notes here that Gentiana is a high messenger. How appropriate on this blessed 420 day.
Yeah. Happy holidays, everybody.
Blaze it.
From our family to yours.
I know that you're in the future where it's no longer such a blessed day, but just know that that's the world that we live in right now.
We're recording this on 420, yes.
We are hotboxing.
Thank you. Some good Gentiana right now.
Yeah, so she shows up kind of out of nowhere. Like, the dog kind of leads you away from the dude ranch, and then this woman is there. And I had a problem with that in that she shows up and she seems interesting, and it's whatever. And then after that, it felt like they were scrambling to retcon, like, this is who she is, this is why she's important. Like, as you are running to do an errand for her, they're like, this is why we care about it. And it's like, you should establish that we care about this person and what she wants before.
To me, it doesn't matter. I mean, she doesn't.
I was about to say the same thing, but maybe not nearly as hurtful.
Well, I think to me,
she's like the classical Greek messenger Tiresias, so, especially with her lack of like literal eyes. Which is she
blind?
I think so.
No, she's not blind.
She just has her eyes closed.
She just has her eyes closed because she does not need to see.
Exactly. Yeah. She can. Mm. She has the god's vision in her. Mind
I mean, because, I guess if I didn't need to see, I'd just have my eyes closed all the time too.
But like Tiresias in a lot of plays, he's not a very interesting character. He just kind of serves to bring the plot along.
Such relatable content.
Yeah, and I felt like, so I only get my Roman and Greek mythology through Disney. So remember like how Hercules interfaced with the blind sisters
The Fates.
The Fates.
The Fates.
Yeah.
And if you ever watched, what is it? Jason and the Argonauts, or like Clash of the Titans, where Perseus tries to go and defeat Medusa. In order for him to figure out how to defeat Medusa, he visits the Gray Sisters, who are essentially like oracles, but they're blind and they share an eye. And the way that he retrieves information about them is to like capture their eye and say, hey, I'm not going to give you back your eye unless you tell me what to get. And so they tell Perseus what he needs. And the blind factor and the fact that they can sort of see into the future and see what's happening kind of reminded me of Gentiana as well.
And they make a point of like, she is like the voice of the... They make a parallel
angel
between her and Luna Freya, where it's like Luna is the oracle, so she sees, she can communicate with the gods in a certain way, and this other girl is like speaking back to the gods or something. Or I might have that reversed. I don't remember.
So something just, so she seems ageless because she appears in a cutscene to back when Noctis was even a tinier piece of shit.
When his wheelchair
times. Yeah, in his wheelchair times.
It did.
Yeah.
Why was he in his wheelchair?
Who knows?
Was he in a wheelchair?
He was in a wheelchair.
That totally looked like he was in a wheelchair.
Peak laziness.
I thought they were just sitting on a bed.
No, he was in a wheelchair.
Do we think that he was actually paralyzed or...
That's some crazy
Are
ass backstory.
Are his legs Magitek legs?
So I just watched The Handmaiden last night, and I think it's something like the caregiver who rides around in a chair strapped to someone's back. He was just too lazy. He's in the wheelchair, and he gets pushed around because he's royalty, and he's not going to walk.
That's what it, that's, yeah, that makes sense.
The royal
or
palanquin.
Maybe he had some illness, and then Luna Freya healed him, and that's why she
That's a much more romantic
suggestion. Oh, I like
suggestion.
That.
Take your logic.
Right? I should be writing this, this game.
I don't know.
That could actually be a really good angle. But what were you saying about Gentiana?
Well, just that in that cutscene, she looks the same, 100% the same, but also she opens her ding-dang eyes, and they aren't like black orbs of death void, which was surprising to me because she just kept them shut the whole time. I thought it would be kind of like...
Like a scary transition.
Like Never Ending Story, the statues where they open their eyes and suddenly it's this crazy light, blinding horror thing. Like, yeah, I want a little more horror in this. It's not spooky enough. Anyway,
I thought the
we'll get to
was
that.
Spooky.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Right. So Gentiana essentially says, who has very beautiful eyes, by the way, she says, you got to touch these three rocks. Right?
Basically.
But why?
And
no, that was even in
Does
game.
Does she even give a why?
No she's like, you need to get Rama's favor.
Like, it sounds like such an RPG thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, but even in game, it's not really wrapped up in a lot of fanfare. It's like, go touch these rocks, please.
Yeah. I'm not sure why. Like, I didn't pick up like why we had to do these things.
This is my problem with the
if
writing
you wanna go,
in this
if
game.
If we want to go back to my points earlier with crystals and rocks holding information and knowledge... Clearly, he needs to commune with these stones so he can get Remu's blessing. Right.
But that's never really established in, like...
It's between the lines.
I did get that feeling from it.
That one's
particularly
for
where one says something like, get Remu's blessing.
I could be reaching.
Yeah. So...
Just say it.
The point is, we need to get Remu's blessing. And I think they pronounce it Rama.
Yeah, which Rama, is wrong. Yeah.
Do they really?
Yeah. Ramu.
In the Japanese, I'm listening, it's Remu.
Do you actually read that Rama?
It's Ramuh. Ramu.
Right. I read it as Ramu.
Yeah, I read it as Rama.
In the voice.
Rama Lama Ding Dong.
In the voice, like in the voice acting, they kept referring it to as Rama.
Yeah, they said Rama.
But it was like an extended A at the end. So it wasn't like Rama, like Rama Lama.
No, like I think in the phrase but ma harbles, like the ma is spelled Muh. Rama.
Yeah,
that's a very technical example. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think of Final Fantasy 14, the MMO, I think they call it Remu also.
Cool.
It doesn't matter.
Well, so off you go.
Off you go. Traipsing through the forest, touching magical stones, getting divine blessings.
And the touch points, the touch rocks, are quite a bit far away.
Yes, and I have no car, and this is misery.
Did you not get a chocobo?
I got the chocobo.
But still, though.
But still.
Yeah.
But then Pronto would keep singing the song.
Yeah, so, it was very good. It
doesn't for me.
Yeah. So for those that actually didn't get Deadeye, you had to get Deadeye at this point.
Yeah.
Right?
When I was running across the chocobo ranch, the chocobo man stopped me and was like, there's a Deadeye. I'm like, cool. So I went and did that real
quick. Fix it.
A Deadeye.
So what did you think of Deadeye?
I thought it was interesting. It was a fun fight. That was probably the highlight for me this playthrough. I may or may not have stopped playing after the dungeon in this one because I got so angry. But I will catch up next time. And I did read the walkthrough, so I can discuss what happens. But
you cliff noted. You cliff noted the podcast.
As an English major, yes, I cliff noted this podcast.
So I did have a similar experience where I had to catch up because I wasn't with you guys last time. And when I did beat Gargantuan Kendall, I got through that whole thing. You cannot save anywhere through it. And then when it got to the save point, my game crashed and I had to do it all over again.
I would have cried.
And I almost pulled Catherine and read what was up and then would have just come here and lied to your faces. But I didn't do that. And instead, I did like a whole bunch of side quests and leveled up. I'm now level 29.
Yay!
Nice.
Presto sings that, and I love it whenever he does.
He does, and it's so cute.
I love it.
Presto's the best.
All right, so we fight Deadeye, which is an interesting fight, and we covered it in briefly in some previous episodes. And we're on the chocobos, which, by the way, I'm not really enjoying my chocobo rides.
Why? Did you change all the colors?
I did, but riding them is not that fun.
Oh, no, they have such good animations.
So
their tails are so floof.
Yeah. So I think the speed is pretty good, but I just wish they were a little faster. And I'm at like level 5 chocobo speed.
I think the speed is fine. I don't like the getting on and off.
So that's annoying. What's the most annoying for me is when your buddies try to come up beside you and immediately get pushed away as soon as they touch just a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, the hitboxes on the chocobo are buck wild.
It's super strange.
Yeah.
They use Regalia-sized hitboxes.
Yeah. Yeah, trying to like leap over small rails is an exercise of frustration.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like jumping over, like whenever you have to go outside of the road, you got to jump over that little fence thing, and that's annoying. Something about it.
Have you chocoboed more? I'm thinking that my lack of problem is just because I haven't ridden them really outside of these mandatory sections.
Yeah, so when I didn't have the Regalia, I pretty much just like used the chocobo to do some side quests.
But like before this, where you were sort of forced to chocobo or hoof it for hours on end, did you chocobo?
I did.
Okay.
What was your question?
You chocoboed. I chocono.
I see. So you just walk. That's what you're saying.
500 miles. Yeah, anytime I was not in the car, I was just hoofing it.
I did that for a long time too.
I
don't know why.
I hooked it to the second one because I got frustrated with the birds and I just left him alone. And then a giant toad popped in on top of my character.
Oh, well, he probably wrecked you.
Me. Yep. Yeah, that was very frustrating.
Yep.
I was like, why am I dead now? And then a toad appeared and I was like, cool. This might as well happen.
I'm having a great time. Just jump on me.
So as you're going to get these touch sticks, Ramu's touch sticks. The first two are kind of out in the open, right? And when you approach them, like there's like a little scene where they kind of talk about like what's happening. They mention a little bit about Gentiana. And when you're about to touch it, I forget, does Noctis get like a brief flash? Does he sort of get
there's cut scenes, like flashbacks.
Yeah.
For each touch.
Yeah. Mm. And they were also when they were children. It's little Noctis and little Lunafreya, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that one of the stones? Did that happen when he touched one of the stones?
They happened throughout the section. I can't really remember like place, like anchor when they happened in the timeline.
Yeah. I think the first cutscene was when you run into Umbra and Gentiana, and then it's Noctis and Lunafreya, and they're talking about the cosmology book that you actually find in a couple of
places.
Cosmogony? Oh,
cosmology is other stuff.
Okay. So, cosmogony book.
Cosmopolitan. Copy of Cosmopolitan.
The Cosmopolitan book.
Yep.
And you can actually read excerpts from it around, like they have copies scattered and you get
like
different
scattered lore.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah.
And neat things to do with a hair tie.
That's cosmetology.
Oh.
That's.
Oh.
Eh.
No, it isn't.
No, it's not.
And so I just want to briefly talk about like what the rocks look like, what the touch sticks look like. They kind of look like white trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's lightning coming
off. It's like a vibe from them.
Yeah, I also got like a Jesus vibe from it as well. Like
why?
Because I don't know, something reminded me of like the burning bush. and how
Jesus. Because these were zippity zap. Like that was okay, that was something I thought was super ding dong cool. Is when you start this thing, off in the distance, lightning is just hitting the same spot and over. Yeah. It's raining and you're running in that direction. And I was like, yo, this is about to be super dope. And it wasn't. But that was really cool for a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool until you get there and you're like, well, I guess I'm gonna touch this rock
now. The next one.
Now I need to touch another one.
Listen, you got the touch. And you got the power.
Yeah!
Thank you.
All right.
So, I thought he was going Hall & Oates.
After we touch the two stones, then we're directed to another land called Focio. I don't know how the English voice actors
said Foshio.
What, really?
I thought it was like Focia.
Yeah, it was like a caved area, right?
Yeah, it's a cave.
It certainly wasn't how I thought it was pronounced.
Yeah. So the third touchstone is in this cave, which becomes a dungeon, and gave us definite flashbacks of the waterfall.
Yeah.
Not me.
Pretty much, well.
Apparently Scott figured out the combat.
There were, you know. I feel like there
and
were.
I did too, so I was enjoying it myself, but.
Yeah, sorry, like in this cave, like I felt there were like really needless jump scares.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That didn't need to be there.
The imps.
You could see them from a mile away.
No, not only the imps.
No. I mean, if you're looking at the level design, you can see where something's going to happen to you.
When you're crawling through, like in between the rocks.
Oh, that. Yeah, I remember that.
That one actually was pretty good, but I didn't jump.
No. I did.
I was like, why is this necessary at this juncture?
And they stole my boy. They dragged my boy away.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. I want to get to that and spend some time there. But when the guy jumps out, they lock the camera in this like close angle where it's like scratching and stuff. I had pulled back on the joystick. And so when the camera returned to my control, I was clear across the other side of the room. Just like Knox is like, nope, I'm done.
But yeah, you can tell from the level design that it's very like foreshadowing because... I mean, there's, you know, in every Final Fantasy, there's like small items you can pick up throughout the world and through dungeons, and they're very telegraphed. Like, there's a left turn when you should be going right, and there'll probably be an enemy there.
And if there's a dead end in that left turn,
there's usually an item.
Yeah, there's usually an item. Right.
Well, that's in all video games is they teach you to go the wrong way first so you can pick up the extra stuff, and that's just that's just good game design.
Right. Okay. So by the time you're about to sort of head into the final cavern,
I actually don't really know what's happening in this cavern because we get to the final boss and she's complaining about some child that I don't know.
Yeah, right. It was like a big serpent.
Her child?
Who took
her child?
That
Medusa?
That glitched out for me. I didn't get any message and then it was just like, I can help you. I can't help you. So she just looked at my face and then I had to pick one of two.
So it's like this Medusa character.
Yeah. And how freaky dicky was the design of that?
I didn't like it.
Yeah. It was,
right?
That was spooky.
I've always liked the character design of Naga, so I was kind of hype when it was that, and then I just didn't want to fight it because I hate the combat so much.
mine was over in two seconds.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mine lasted quite a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, did you fight it?
Mine took some time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I fought. You could not fight?
I think you have
to fight.
I think you have to, even if you say you can help her. I think you still have to.
When I told her that I can help you, she said, that means you stole my baby.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what she said.
One of those situations.
Cool.
Yeah.
What were the choices for you, Scott?
Oh, it was something like, I can't help you. And that was all. I didn't get text. There was no conversation.
There wasn't for anyone, I think.
You're saying there was
there's like a little brief something that she can say, and then like she goes, "Where's my child?" And
so
then
I didn't
have to
answer
her.
Same. Okay. So I had the same thing. I was like, "Oh, nothing's happening. Yeah, I can't help you."
File a bug report.
Time to slash apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, so the thing is, like, I didn't actually end up killing it completely.
How?
It just sort of went away after I damaged it a lot.
Oh, mine turned into sludge.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Blew her up. And it had a cool shader effect where like 1,000 snakes filled the grounds with their blood and death.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It does sound like you're making that up.
I did not get a satisfying death for the Naga.
I can't tell if he's lying.
Nope.
But.
It's in the Japanese version.
A lot in this game hasn't been feeling satisfying to me. And like, I feel like.
Why?
Like, there's just not a lot of like setup for stuff. Like, especially in the writing. Just because like this. Like, for example, this whole section that we've been talking about, like, you start off and the dog is there, and that's compelling because you know, oh, that's Lunafreya, and you send Lunafreya a message, and that's compelling because you have, like, this emotional attachment to this character already. And, like, you're kind of on a quest. Like, you have a problem introduced, like, your car is gone, and, like, this Archean thing has just happened. And you follow the dog, and then all of a sudden this woman who we don't know shows up and tells us to touch rocks for no reason. And you're like, all right, I guess I have nothing else going on, and I'll just go touch these rocks.
The story is far more compelling when they're focused on the friends.
Exactly. Like, they have all these pieces that could make a really nice... story and like a really compelling game to play, but they keep distracting you with all this nonsense errands. Yeah, like these nonsense errands that I don't care about for these people that I don't know. And it's just like, why? Like, when you finish it, it's like, I guess this is done now. Like, I guess I can go do the laundry. Or it's just, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. So for Rama, like, I felt it was just something that we had to do in order to achieve or like get Rama. But I felt like that was more like Final Fantasy saying, like, hey, here's the new summoning system that we're going to introduce you to, rather than it being like an integral part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that I think, so traditionally in Final Fantasy games, what happens is they let you play the first 50 to 60% of the game is quite linear. And they tell you the story. They're like teaching you the world. They're showing you the pieces. And then you get this dumped into this open world. They give you a direction, but now you have a reason that you can like meander. And this game is dramatically different, where it's like from the beginning you can run around and do whatever the hell you want. Yeah. And so that's why this kind of weird and sucks.
Yeah, and it's missing all the backstory and like all these pieces are just gone. And it's I play games for stories, and so it's like I have a hard time caring about anything that's happening in the game right now, because the stuff that I care about isn't happening.
Right.
And the
problem is too, there's some backlash over Final Fantasy 13 because they basically railroaded you for the entire game for like 30-40 hours with the story, and like you really couldn't do anything else, and it was just like game on rails, and people were like, nope, don't like that, don't want it. So I think this is an overcorrection. Yeah. But
I mean, at the same, I didn't know is that this game was originally developed to be a different game, and then they decided to make it a main Final Fantasy game, and so they changed teams and changed directors and took pieces from that original game and decided what did and did not work and made a new game. And that's why it feels so piecemeal and weird sometimes, because it is.
Yeah.
And it's super... I had no idea, but it makes so much sense that's the case.
We've been waiting for this game for, like, ever.
I had no idea. It's been in development for like 10 years. I had no idea.
Ever.
Yeah, because they started showing like clips of this world like 3 or 4 years ago, right?
No. I was in 12 to 10 years ago. I was waiting for this game for a long effing time. Scott.
I was just going to second what Catherine been saying, because this part we've been playing feels so very video gaming, and I just don't appreciate that, because what I came here for was bonding with my boys, and what I have been getting is nonsense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well said.
So I
want to continue on with the story, because I think the second half of what we played through was a lot more compelling than the first half.
It was dope.
It was dope.
It was dope.
Yeah. So as soon as you get Ramo, which... still is not clear, right? Like, what happens? And it just says, hey, if you want to do these summons, like, you check out tutorials and skills. Then you sort of proceed. It's like, hey, we should really get our car back.
Yeah, well, we get our handy-dandy phone calls us and says, go get your car. And we see an Imperial spaceship or airplane thing.
A huge thing.
Travel over us. Presumably it has the Regalia, but we don't know.
Yeah.
And actually, it kind of gives some explanation as to why the world was plagued by Ramu's like wrath, is because the friends say, like, oh, he's trying to help us out, essentially, because we are divinely blessed, if you will,
and you will need that powers,
and Ramu's storm was preventing the Imperials from navigating the airspace.
I did not get that was not clear to me.
Yeah, they saved the car. Ramu saved the car.
Yeah.
They say it out loud. I think it was Ignis, best boy.
Yeah.
Says something effect. They probably couldn't get through with all of the storm happening.
And then Pronto's also like, a pun. Thanks, Ramu.
And so you approach... I think Cindy tips you off, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we head to the base, and the game tells us, all right, we need to do some reconnaissance.
No, Cindy tells you with like the classic good news, bad news.
Oh, yeah, good news, car is somewhere, found it. Bad news,
it's in a base.
Fortified.
Cindy's great.
So you actually make camp with the boys and discuss your plans and your options, and it's really, you have no input, but Ignis...
You're a boy. You have no input.
Ignis tells you that you're going to do some infiltrating at night under the cover of darkness. And, I lost my train of thought. Thanks, Marco.
Was it because Marco was making obscene gestures with his hands?
I think it was Marco and Scott miming to each other.
Scott did it first.
Children.
It didn't happen on camera. It didn't happen.
So we start sneaking into the base at night, and this becomes a Metal Gear Solid game.
They just riffed every... They were like, that's a good idea. Let's do that.
It's not a good stealth game, but I had a lot of fun with that.
Metal Gear or... This game.
This game.
Oh.
So this is the part that I didn't play, and I'm excited to go back and play it because it sounds like something I'd be into. If you do mess up the stealth stuff, can you still play, or does it make you restart?
No, you murder everything.
Yeah, you just murder everything.
I'm down with
that. I think it's a really interesting gameplay design is you can either do the stealth, or if you suck at the stealth like me, then...
Perfect.
Just Gaijin smash your way through everything.
I also suck at stealth, so I'm into that. I hate when games make you restart stealth levels if you're not stealthy enough.
I think you have to restart.
Game was actually going to do. I thought that if you didn't stealth it up real good, it was going to game you over and make you go back to the start.
Well,
they do
mention
I just
like,
stealth real good.
Like the base is too powerful for us. We have to use stealth. And
I was too stealthy, and so I just didn't get caught ever.
Oh, really?
Nice.
I got caught trying to kill like the five Imperials with my warp slashes.
That's where I got tripped up. Yeah. Scott, can you tell us about
how did you do this?
When you find, there's a cutscene where you get found, and there's a whole conversation that happens about that. Like once you find the car.
Oh man.
Or is it after?
No, I think it's after. You must have gotten further without getting caught.
Yeah.
I just started murdering, like, when I got up to when you had to, like, kill five, like, right where Joe is.
Yeah.
Then I was
I killed that. I did that.
And then what happened after that?
Then you see the car. Through another door, and there's a car, and it wasn't until there was a tank, like, one of those walker tanks.
Yeah.
That just started actually there was a cutscene that broke the stealth for me.
Yeah, I didn't,
like,
we
ran to the car
there.
In stealth. I mean, we walked through like a very well lit lot.
Yeah.
So I was terrified of the light.
And they said the searchlight does nothing.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm going to stay out of the light. And then they're like.
So it's not like a Wind Waker prison break situation.
No.
Where the light touches you and the whole game stops. And
the stealth was really bad.
Don't remind me of a better game.
Everything was really scripted.
Stealth mechanics were bad, but I liked the whole concept of what we had to do.
Right.
Nice. It was still dope.
So. In this base, as you sort of make your way through, you find your car, little Regalia, all shiny, up in the middle,
Reggie.
With spotlights all around it. But as soon as you
Reggie.
Find
some
it...
Some mechanic was clearly
Reginald.
Buffing it.
Oh, Reggie.
But as soon as
this
you find
my
it,
car now.
There's it. Like a bunch of Imperials that sort of storm upon you, right? Like,
yeah, and these are not just any Imperials, these are Uber Imperials.
Yeah, that's fortified by the red energy that's flowing throughout the base.
Oh, yeah.
Right, because they're like, there's something that's powering this base... We're getting this like red vibes everywhere.
And some Magitek armors are trying to kill us.
Right. And the sense that I got was like this red engine thing that's powering the whole place was sort of crystal driven, right?
Probably.
But maybe, you know, like it seemed stressed, meaning like that's not the way that you're supposed to use a crystal.
That's why it was red.
Yeah.
Right.
Red is bad. Yes.
And whoever, like all the bad guys that you fought, had like a little mark beside them that saying they were a little bit fortified.
I didn't notice. I just wrecked shop.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding. I really didn't notice anything
so
fancy
like,
about the redness.
No, like the red aura in the world.
Yeah,
like
I saw it happen, but at fighting them was like fighting anybody else.
Right.
Yeah,
the fighting wasn't that much different, but they were supposed to be a little bit plussed.
Interesting.
But you make your way through, you fight, you get through like one big fight and it's like the area is a little bit clear. And then you get into like a bigger fight with like two of these big Magitek engine armors, right? And at this point, I feel like your party starts to die a little bit, like your party's kind of getting knocked down. No, you didn't get that?
No.
So
the resolution that we're leading up to here came by like complete surprise. I was like, oh, you just want me to learn how to do that. Okay, cool.
Oh, mine was like, your party's dying. You can now do this summon.
Yeah, that's by design.
Right, yeah, that's by design. Right, and so, but the thing is, like, I had the hardest fucking time trying to summon.
There's no UI.
There's no UI.
For summoning.
No, it's random.
No, this was user initiated,
or wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it says there's an icon that says summon.
Yeah,
with whatever the trigger is.
Right, for me it was like the left trigger.
When you hit the trigger, nothing happens.
But nothing happens.
And you have to hold it down, and still nothing happens. And then
you have to wait. You have to. Why don't I remember this? So I was not ever gonna die, but the what I got from. I'm like level 50.
Marco the Deathless.
Yes. No, so they give off this line where it's like the summons basically essentially come out at random when you're about to get murdered. And so I think probably what happened was you're about to die and they're like, let's help a friend.
So there are two, I think the conditions of Ramo being summoned and the condition for the Titan being summoned are different.
Oh, wait, did you get the Titan?
No, I got Ramu.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you're supposed to get Ramu.
The scripted thing.
Yeah, that's scripted, but I still got the summon thing. But like I read later, because I didn't know how to summon this thing, that if one of your party starts to go down and it's in danger, the summon is going to be for the Titan.
Oh. Oh, like the Archean?
Yeah, the Archean.
Oh.
But if for this scripted event, which is like if everyone is kind of suffering, then the summon is going to be Ramu. So it gets to this called event where like you have to summon Ramu.
Yeah.
And then Ramu comes
from the sky and essentially nukes the whole base.
Like
and
everything.
Nice. Everything has this like dope ass red flame shader applied to it and everything's dead. And somehow you survived, but.
And then you're just like, all right, let's go get that car, which I thought
was. And the
car
survived.
Your car was not blown up by the guy.
That's just quality engineering.
Yes. That's fine German engineering. And so,
why so many Germans?
It's fine. Nilfheim engineering.
Regalia.
Nilfheim.
So, like, there wasn't any exposition to that. If this was a scripted event of Rama showing up and sort of giving you
Zeusing the place.
Exactly. I think like Ignis just says a little bit of like, oh,
that was shocking.
Yeah. Like, I'm glad we have him on our side or something like that. And I thought that was like,
That's
dude, you guys just saw a god.
Yeah.
Titan like do his shit.
Completely nonplussed. Like
I think they've seen this before.
I don't know.
I feel like they wouldn't have.
No, okay, so in mine,
Presto would have been hyped.
That's what I'm telling
you.
Exactly. In mine, Presto lost his goddamn mind.
Oh,
that's right, yeah.
As the Titan just disappears, as Rama disappears in the background.
Oh, you're right.
Presto has like, that was so cool! Like,
yeah.
And just freaks out. He's having a good time. And I was like, yeah, bud, me too.
Yeah.
He's the best.
And so you get your car. You're like, you blew everyone up. Everyone in this place is dead.
Yeah, you murdered
absolutely
a lot of people.
Murdered.
I don't think there was any real people.
Well, they're like the Magitek armor.
Yeah,
husks.
Yeah.
Imperials are real people too.
Yeah, that's something that like a human would say. So
listen, you filthy host.
All right. So you get your car back. Everything's
about,
back in order.
You hop into it, and then Mr. Anime Boy comes in.
Oh,
right.
I have a note for this. I have a big old note. Where's the note?
Does Scott want to narrate this part?
Yeah. Okay. So what happens is Revis Nox Flure. So he is Lunafreya's brother. It is implied that he is hunting her down. He's also crazy angry all the time. I kind of wonder what he's compensating for there. Like, does he think he's not a good kisser or something? But then lastly, in the previous playthrough that we did, Gladiolus blocks and you block a Titan's fist on multiple occasions from moving an inch further in your direction. Meanwhile, Ravis, like brings his sword down on Gladiolus and knocks him into the car like it was nothing.
Anime physics.
That's what I'm asking about. What the hell?
Maybe he's imbued with some Titans.
There's got to be some sort of magical reason why this is happening, because Gladiolus's whole background is like he was always meant to be a combatant. He is crazy strong. All this stuff. Like he should be.
I mean, that's supposed to be hyping up Ravis as like.
And you guys remember Frederick
but
from?
It's not written that well. It's a little ham-fisted.
Yeah.
This whole game is not written that well, but
isn't Mass Effect.
It's not Mass Effect. He's Lunafreya's brother and she has crazy powers, maybe he's got crazy powers of some kind.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Like there could be a reason.
We do get some like backstory about his collusions with the Empire.
Right.
And
how
that makes Noctis and the rest of them feel.
Not only does Malfoy show up, it's Malfoy and little buddy Arden, right? Your favorite Marco.
This is where Arden kind of Deus plays up a little more again. Like, hey, I kind of hate you guys. Like,
he's chaotic.
He seems less good in this scene.
Yeah. And I think your suspicions are right, where the true bad guy isn't going to be Ravus.
No, not Arden.
No, like, kind of like what this scene painted out to me was that a Final Fantasy newbie is probably going to think, oh, Ravus is the true bad guy.
Nope.
Whereas Final Fantasy, not new fans, but
first timers.
I'm a
not
first
the first timer. They're going to kind of know that Arden is going to be the puppet master.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I saw glimpses of that in this scene. And what does he say to the point? Like, he says something like,
not now, we have to go.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to get another scarf.
Mervin's having a sale.
Let's go scarf shopping.
Let's go to Nordstrom.
This one's made of silk.
Did you say Mervin's?
I said Mervin's.
That's so West Coast.
I know. I'm sorry.
Is that a real store?
It is. Mervin's is a JCPenney kind of equivalent on the West Coast.
I would assume with the name Mervin's.
Yeah.
It's like Kohl's, if you ever know Kohl's.
Yeah, it's exactly Kohl's. Yep.
Yeah. Kohl's definitely an East Coast.
How come there's no shops in this game? People have cars, apparently. There's no car dealerships.
Oh, great question.
That's fair.
I feel like cars are very rare, because either only cars that you see in Final Fantasy are like the really beat up 50s looking cars.
Yeah.
So we're actually in Cuba. This game is set in Cuba.
Nifty.
Bold.
And we work for the king who has all the money.
There it is.
We've unlocked it.
So this is kind of like the end of the chapter, right? Like, Arden leaves with his little boy, Ravus, and we're kind of left at the car, and we decide to go back to Lestalem. Because why?
Because exactly. Iris is there, and I think she called up Gladiolus.
Yeah.
Gladiolus has been trying to call her this whole time and complaining about how she's not answering her phone. So I think
she's
finally
ghosting
calls
me.
Back.
She's just being a teenager.
And so they finally get there, and they receive some news that the Empire has come by,
mm-hmm.
right? Extracted some information mm-hmm. from the team.
And they murked poor Jared.
And murdered... Poor Jared.
I didn't know his name until he was dead.
And
if you read the walkthrough online of this, the literal last line is like, I have it written down. It was like, Iris has some bad news, which you shouldn't care about. And that's a problem. Like, we should care. Like, if a character has bad news, we should care. That's just indicative of how bad the writing is at this point in the game.
What was the name of the little boy? Was he Talbot?
Talcum.
Talcum powder.
Tarukato.
Scott.
All right. And he's sort of very sad.
Right.
And
he walks in. Sad and boy. He walks up to Noctis and says, hey, Noctis, I believe in you.
Crying
Could
boy.
Could you go kill the bad guys? It'd be great.
I believe in the prince and monarchy.
It's just so good being ruled by one person's will. I just love it so much.
And so this enrages you, and you're like, all right. This is the end of the Empire. This is what driven me to kill the Empire.
We have to avenge Jared.
Yeah.
But you're like, forget my dad. Jared.
Wait, do we know that?
Jared, you're the real MVP here.
Jared was just some guy. I don't really know
him
that well.
Yeah, do we know that was his dad or grandfather?
Who?
No, I was saying Noctis, like the last straw for Noctis was not his dad being killed. It was
Jared.
Yeah, he cared more about Jared. About his own dad.
Final Fantasy.
Put together such a good continental breakfast.
Final Fantasy 15-2, The Quest for Jared.
Jared's Revenge.
And so like the end of what we play is we're all in the car, right? Iris is now with us, and we're gonna go somewhere.
We're gonna go Kaim.
We're gonna go to Kaim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For why I don't remember.
Right. And so that's where we're gonna leave this off. For the next chapter, do we have stuff?
We have stuff.
Let's talk about some gameplay and some gripes.
One question that I have, and it's not a gripe, it's just like a question: are the enemy designs in this game similar to the enemy designs in other Final Fantasy games. Because I understand the Imperials. I understand their motivation. I understand where they're coming from. I like their character design. But everything else seems like totally random. Like they open like a monster manual from Dungeons & Dragons and we're like, and we're going to have goblins and we're going to have slimes. And I played World of Warcraft once and this is cool.
The
and,
cactus like, popped up and hit me.
Yeah. The cactuar.
He jumped out of nowhere and Presto wouldn't shut up about it. It was great.
I got a hunt for a cactuar and I'm very hyped. So, I can answer your question.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm down with like the fantasy, just like assortment of things. But then there's like weirdness thrown in where there's like dead Ronin and like all this kind of weird mythology that I feel like I'm missing and I don't understand the motivation of any of it.
So, the only ones that are real Final Fantasy monsters so far are the slimes. The frosty bombs.
Yeah.
The goblins. Behemoth. The goblins are not.
Yeah, goblins are in like Final Fantasy II, Final Fantasy III.
I guess they are. Spare it's true.
So the are the thunder ghosts.
The thunder ghosts are. The Ronin is not.
Where is the Ronin?
He's shown up in some waterfall. Of the dungeons for me. He's the tall that's right, waterfall. Boy.
Midgar Sommar is a throwback to Final Fantasy VII. There's a giant serpent in that game.
There's curls.
Curls are
the big frogs are also big, in the old games. Yeah,
big frogs, the giant. So a lot, yes, a so lot
just,
are.
This is like the wildlife that just doesn't like you.
Yeah. Okay, you just don't know Final Fantasy canon.
I really don't.
And it's fine.
Yeah,
it's okay.
I kind of wish more of the enemies were Imperial, so it's you feel more of a purpose in fighting.
Sometimes
them,
there are random Imperial drops that you fight.
There are, and that's which cool. I like. I like that a lot.
Brings
too.
Me into the world.
Yeah.
So. Traditionally, too, you're navigating a world and you go through the different floras and faunas and locales, and the enemies make sense when they're in these like different locales. But the dungeons have all felt a little generic and copy pasta.
Yeah.
So you don't. There's no reason for there to be like, why the fuck is there a Ronin?
Did you guys find
in
the
this
secret
waterfall,
door?
Yeah.
The secret door.
Yeah, no. The secret door in every tomb.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want to know what the fuck.
In Phocio, there was a secret door, too, not just a tomb.
Yeah, no, in all of them. In all the
tombs. In, like, the dungeon, the dungeony things.
I don't have the key.
Also, there's side quests to go and get, you can go to other tombs and get other weapons.
Nice.
The quests will not take you there. You just need to look it up.
Hmm.
Oh.
Sorry.
That kind of sucks.
I think it's typical. I know. I'm like a Final Fantasy apologist, sympathizer. So,
speaking of apologizing and sympathizing, what do you guys feel about... I felt like in the previous episode, I kind of had a handle on the controls, but there is just a lot of jankiness that I experienced in this one where I feel like I kind of lost control a lot of times.
How? In what way? Like physical like movement or control of a battle?
Yeah, like just navigating the battle and knowing what was up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's no real like... Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not really like a lock-on button per se.
Not really.
There's
a
lock-on.
There's like a soft lock-on.
You have to hold the lock-on.
No,
yeah, you have to hold it
down. It
depends
on what you want to do. Like you lock down only for team strikes or warp strikes. So team strikes are your left trigger and warp strikes are your right trigger. So if you want to do a team strike, you can lock down on an enemy and have Gladiolus do his Tempest Strike, or you can have...
Why do I feel like the words that you're saying are falsehoods?
No, they're true.
Yeah. When I lock onto somebody, I attack that person.
Yeah, that's
normal attack.
That's your
not
single
warp
attack.
Strike, not
but if you're not holding any of the triggers and you warp strike, you're going to warp strike nowhere as well.
No, but he's saying you can hold the button and attack at the same time, which you can do.
You can do that. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I need to start playing with the controller because I didn't realize there's two different lock-ons.
Yeah.
On keyboard, it's just shift.
So with the left trigger, with the left button, the left bumper.
That's the technique button.
That's the technique button, and that locks on. And it sets your guys up to do whatever.
You have your single target DPS from Prompto. You have your multi-target DPS from Ignis. And your kind of AoE-ish kind of sweeping attacks from Gladiolus.
Yeah. And those you can expand by spending AP in the,
it's Ascension. It's like your talent tree.
Yeah, Ascension tree.
What else in combat? I mean, I'm always holding down dodge, mostly.
I never touch it.
Really?
Wow.
I mean, unless like a prompt comes up, I'm just hitting things or warping around.
Same. I feel like they're introducing all this really cool mechanics that I could use, and I don't.
I'm warping a lot around, especially if there's a warp point, because every time you warp to a warp point, it replenishes your mana, and it starts healing you up a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like I only see them highlighted when I don't need them, and then when I'm panicking and I have no mana and I have no health,
You should definitely turn on wait mode if you think the combat's too... too much happening all at once.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like this is a strange combination of like Devil May Cry fighting versus like Final Fantasy 12 fighting, which I really, really liked.
This feels nothing like Final Fantasy 12.
It feels like Final Fantasy 12 because your party is kind of autonomous.
Yes, it's true.
But I liked Final Fantasy 12 because you can kind of AI program them and say like, I want you to be the healer whenever I'm down like 10% health, like you'll heal me. Like I thought that part was really awesome and you can sort of depend them as your roles.
We're definitely struggling without a healer.
Yeah, it's bad.
There is
you can put the healing magic on your magic.
Yeah, well no, there's healing magic and there's also in the talent trees there's first aid kits and they can heal themselves.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I love caring for my precious boys.
So
you can.
So that's the other thing. Like I feel like you're the only one that's sort of healing them whenever that's crucial, and I'm not sure if that actually plays into the story of what this is about.
There's a skill that you need to get called first aid, and you get it for each of them, and then they can heal themselves.
Hmm.
Nice.
Also use your techniques a lot because when you're doing that, you have invincibility frames essentially for your
character. True. Oh. But also just they do heal you. They come over and like pick you up.
Only when you're in danger mode, though.
Right, but that's the extent of
it. But
their
I actually don't use
you.
That. It takes too long. I lose too much maximum HP, so I always pop a potion when I.
Yeah,
hit
when
zero.
I'm feeling.
Yeah, you can pop a pot when you're in danger.
No, I mean I've done that, but I just wait because I want to enhance the bond that I feel relying on my friends.
So the other thing is like,
dramatic. Yeah.
When you're popping that like left trigger, that left button, sometimes it's not available to me.
Well, you have to wait. You have to wait for the gauge to fill up.
There's a gauge.
There's a gauge.
Green gauge.
You have three dots. Three levels of it. And
I have no idea where on the screen it is, but I do know that there is a limit.
You have to hit the left button.
And every time you do a special move with your bro, it uses up another charge, if you will.
I see. Mm-hmm.
If you don't have any, just hit things. Sorry, this is going back to the part that we played last time. You can leave that in. This is what we're going to last time when we were talking about, when you guys were talking about the gargantuan Ken doll, is they had all those extra enemies around, and that was just so that you could build up your Smurbin Gerbin, where you hit with all of the god swords.
Oh, the Armiger.
Yeah.
That's dope.
So that's what I did, is I just kept smacking all of those, just running, like warp striking them all to death, and then building up the Armiger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A note on the Armiger. Like, how do you actually use it?
No idea.
Oh, it's easy. There's a gauge.
Yeah.
So you have your weapon wheel, and then there's a line around your weapon wheel that gets filled up, and you just beat the shit out of stuff.
So you do that. Does that mean you still have to go around hacking and slashing?
Just hold.
Just hold.
Just hold, and it will cycle through the different swords that you have available. It will just constantly smack with everything that you've got, and it's awesome.
Okay.
Epic.
How do you execute it?
So you do the two bumper triggers.
Two bumpers.
Yeah, the two bumpers, and then that kicks it off. That
it'll start
spawns like all your swords coming up.
Just
and
hold.
Then everyone sort of goes into action, but then you just have to hold down the attack button.
Yeah. I was smashing it, but it's good.
Y'all don't have
to
do that.
You
can just
hold
the
bumpers
to hit
things.
See, stuff like this is not clearly explained at all.
I
am used to examining battle systems, so I guess that might be part of it.
It was really confusing.
Why everyone immediately looks to me, can you explain this, please?
Final Fantasies, how much shit were they?
There's none of this.
Yeah,
because this is completely different.
Every Final Fantasy is a different combat system.
Yeah, but this one's so dramatically different.
Yeah,
every other Final Fantasy has some form of turn-based thing where it's like everything you can do is there in front of you.
Yeah,
but like there's a lot of shit that's hidden in Final Fantasy games. Like in Final Fantasy VII, you like hit left on the menu. There's no indicator that you can go left in this menu, and then there's a whole bunch of options that you're like, that's how you do limit breaks. I didn't know you could do that. So shit like
that. I agree. There's just so much that they just aren't telling you.
It's just
in every aspect of the game.
Just sloppy game design.
No, it is. And my recommendation for everyone is just let it just cascade over you and just
enjoy
just
the story.
Just let it be. It might get better. It might be horrible, but it'll be. It'll probably be okay.
All right. So on that, our next play point is going to be until the end of Precious Source of Power. It's going to be a little bit, but we're going to have 2 weeks until that play point. Because next week, what the team here is going to do is we are going to watch Kingsglaive Final Fantasy 15, and it's available on Amazon Instant Video.
Subscribe if you like.
So this apparently takes place, this is sort of like a CG movie that takes place in like the whole peace treaty thing that went down in the beginning chapters.
Shout out to Javier for cluing us in on all these different animes that we get to watch.
So shout out to friend of the show, Javier, for letting us know
friend that. Friend of the pod.
And we're going to be watching that for the next one. So if you guys want to follow along, watch, and we'll be discussing it for the next episode. But on the episode after that, we're going to be continuing on, and we're going to play until the end of Precious Source of Power. Ooh. Which is...
Yeah.
I'm excited to hopefully have some understanding of who the hell the Imperials are.
And what's going on.
What is going on.
I'd like to maybe put out a little personal challenge for the next time we record one of these. Which is, go through the photos that you've saved and pick the best one you have so far, and Ooh. Let's share them. They'll be in the description of the next episode. Yeah?
Yeah. Good call. All of them are close-ups of Gladiolus' chest.
Bring that. You only get one. You can only find one close-up of his chest to share with us.
It's going to be four Gladioluses and one Prompto.
I'm not sure.
I have a pretty bitch
I don't think he takes
photo.
Selfies. I don't know how many photos there are of my boy.
I'm not bringing no gladiolus to the mix.
What?
You know,
I mean,
Ignis
Sam bring gladiolus. I know what Sam likes.
I have this really great one of him like awkwardly riding a chocobo that I find hilarious.
I have one that was taken where all their eyes are shut. Like it was like a photo where you take off your friends and everyone's blinking.
That's
but I'm like,
amazing.
This is a game. Like they don't have to be blinking in this screenshot. Like what happened?
That is some Westworld shit right
it's
there.
That's so weird.
Great, so join us next week. We're going to be talking about Kingsglaive. And until then, bye.
Bye.
Party on. See ya. What are you hitting?
Shut up. Just keep talking. God damn it. I'm marking the points that I have to like edit out.
You're killing him, Scott.
I actually would love it if you leave this completely unedited. Leave all these things in. So anyway.